Chapter 54. Kimmelin. Kimmelin flew, with the others, on Overburn, away from the Delvers. The call had come. Evacuate the system. Regroup. If the Superiority could control the Delvers, then this war was over. It was hard to accept. From what Kimmelin understood, people had been trying to control these things since they'd first appeared centuries ago. And now someone had done it. Saints and stars, that was bad. She overburned toward Detritus, dodging chunks of destroyed capital ships, both the Defiant and the Superiority ones. Fortunately, the enemy fighters had mostly scattered away at the Delver's appearance, but still, she had to concentrate. Her comm light came on, Sadie trying to talk to her.
"This isn't a good time, Sentry," she said.
Yeah, okay, Sadie replied. But Quirk, what are they doing? She glanced at her proximity monitor, which showed the Delvers ejecting thousands upon thousands of small ships.
Chasing us down and trying to eat us, I believe. Assuming they eat. Perhaps they just kill. It's probably not polite of me to make assumptions about their bodily functions.
Right. Sadie replied, but does that look like a pursuit pattern to you? She paused. Those ships the Delvers had ejected were fanning out. To her horror, smoke began to appear all through the system, and more Delvers were emerging. Smaller, this time only the size of destroyers, but there were thousands of them.
Oh, saints and stars. Thousands of Delvers?
Before today, the galaxy, so far as she knew, had never seen more than one in a single location. Likely they'd chosen to make themselves smaller to not crowd the region.
Look at the things they're sending out, Sadie said.
Despite herself, Kimmelin zoomed in on them. The proximity monitor had scans from long-range sensors, giving her visuals on the nearest of those little ships. They didn't look like the balls of stone and destruction the Delvers usually summoned. In fact, they looked, well, like little flying drones with claw arms. Sadie was right. They weren't chasing Kimmelin or the other fighter groups, though it had seemed that way at first. They were actually moving to the inhibitor stations.
What under the heavens?
Chapter 55, Jorgen.
This is extremely odd behavior, Rinnakeen the Urdale said, stepping up beside Jorgen.
Jorgen nodded in agreement, watching the hologram, trying to figure out what the Delvers were doing.
I have studied each and every recording of a Delver event, Rinnakeen continued. They've never done anything like this. Dare I hope something is different? Less deadly.
I wish I could be as optimistic as you, Jorgen said, pointing. What do they want with the inhibitors? Why are they going to them, then vanishing? Are those inhibitor fields falling?
They are, an aide piped up.
She rushed over with a data pad for him. Each inhibitor station visited by a Delver is dropping its field, suggesting the inhibitor slug inside has been destroyed.
Poor things, Jorgen said. I wonder if they bring the Delvers pain.
He paused. Was there a way to get to some of the slugs before the Delvers did? Dared he risk his people for that? It was why they'd come here. They could try to grab at least a few of those Tanix before leaving. He moved to give the order, but was interrupted.
Sir, a man called from the comm station. You want to see this, sir?
What is it?
He asked, striding over with Rinnakeen and a swarm of Kitson generals. Even Ironsides joined them, peeking over his shoulder. On the screen was a shot of the surface of Detritus. He felt sick as he saw the small Delver ships appearing there. Of course. They ignored inhibition fields. Spencer had said that the shield around Starsight had delayed the Delver that attacked there for a time, but Detritus's shell had been no match for the one that had struck it in that old recording.
He couldn't stop the Delvers. If they wanted detritus, they could take it, as evidenced by them appearing by the thousand on the surface.
"Time to scramble reserves," he said. Wait. What are they doing? Can we zoom in?
I can move the drone closer, the comms officer said, ordering it. As it drew in, Jorgen could make out what the Delver ships were doing. Each was depositing a Tanix safely on the surface of detritus, then hyperjumping away. He looked to the others, who seemed baffled.
So, they're helping now? Rinnakeen said. You see, optimism was warranted.
You might be right, Jorgen said, looking back at the screen as increasing numbers of the slugs were dropped off safely, apparently having been rescued by the Delvers.
I'll admit, there was one element I wasn't factoring in earlier that may have changed my expectations.
And what is that? Rinnakeen asked.
I'd momentarily forgotten, Jorgen said with a smile, that Spensa was involved.
Chapter 56. I knew that some of the Delvers hadn't accepted our help. I wasn't certain how many, but some. Those had lingered on the perimeter of the nowhere. Then they'd vanished, hiding again instead of accepting comfort and change. Yes, they were people, all right. A very different kind of people, but prone to the same inclinations. The majority changed for the better, fortunately. Some accepted it faster than the others, and those went to help the Tanix. The slugs were first terrified, then relieved, their voices echoing in my mind. The Delvers were rescuing the slugs trapped in the inhibitor stations. But where was Braid? I pulled out of the nowhere, found myself kneeling in a broken room, empty save for the rubble from our strange duel. I double-checked and I was me? Yeah, I was certain now. No more Delver in my soul. It felt like taking off a blanket and exposing my sweaty skin to the air. It wasn't a bad feeling, just odd. I stumbled to my feet, then something appeared in my hands. A soft, yellow and blue slug about the size of a loaf of bread. Doom slug, I said.
Doom slug, she fluted.
I gave her a hug, though my left arm screamed in pain. Scud, I'd been shot. Between the adrenaline and the subsequent communication with the Delvers, I'd forgotten. Granted, it had been a grazing blow, but it still hurt. Well, it seems the Delvers were taking the inhibitor slugs to safety, which meant that despite lacking a Delver in my soul, I could hyperjump out of here and get back to the others. Before I did, though, a voice entered my mind.
Miss Nightshade? Chet asked. We have a problem.
Of course we do, I said with a sigh. What is it?
A short time ago, Braid contacted the main station via Comslug. That slug just relayed what she said. The poor thing is quite alarmed, I must say. Braid intends to execute all of the slugs inside the station itself, which is shielded, so no help from the Delvers, I asked. They can break through a shield, as I attempted to do on Starsight so long ago, but it will take them time. I'm trying to explain the danger to my kin, but I fear we shall be too late to act upon this distressing turn. Spensa, Braid is flying there in person to see the order carried out.
She got in a starfighter? I asked.
Yes. Fortunately, the inhibitors closest to this region are still in effect. I've explained the problem to them, so the slugs are blocking her and refusing to go with the Delvers. They won't abandon the Tanix on Evensong. But Miss Nightshade, she is getting close.
Yes, but she'd climbed into a starfighter, and I knew where the station's hangar bay was. Doomslug under my arm, I leaped out into the hallway, and very nearly got shot. I was saved by a stumble, the destructor fire blasting over my head.
With a shout, I dove back into the room, then apologized to Doomslug, who fluted at me in annoyance. I put her down. Well, we just... What was that? Chet? I asked. Something just changed.
Delver, he said. One who didn't want to join us. It has come in your direction. I am pleading with it not to destroy you.
His voice grew even more distant, and my ability to hyperjump was smothered. I sighed, then seized a gun from the rubble. I peeked again into the hallway, but weapons fire from a half dozen soldiers set up behind a makeshift barricade drove me back. Braid had found much better troops than the ones who had been assigned to guard my prison. They knew how to keep me pinned, and each time I tried something, I was forced right back into the room. Scud! I didn't have time for this. If Braid reached Evensong...
Greetings! A deep voice shouted in the hallway outside. By tradition, the masked exile is supposed to announce himself before joining a battle. Consider this your warning.
Was that? I poked my head out to see a tiny figure on a hover platform at the end of the hallway, behind the enemy barricade. Hesho? Hesho was here? Scott, he looked so small next to the enormous Tanasi troops. They'd crush him. One turned a large assault rifle on him. As Hesho zipped forward on his small platform, a flash of light followed, sweeping in an arc in front of him. The Tanasi's head thumped to the floor outside the barricade. Hesho made a motion as if returning a tiny sword to its sheath at his side. But swords didn't make light like that, and little ones certainly didn't sweep through the air in a 2-meter-long crescent like that one had. Right, then. The flying fox samurai with a laser sword needed fire support. I burst into the hallway, gun at my unwounded shoulder, sighting and advancing in a steady walk. I fired on the troops, blasting body parts as they were exposed. Hesho made another sweep of light, then another. What had been a fortified position became a killing field for confused troops trapped between two enemy forces. They tried to shoot him, but blasts went wild as he zipped about, a tiny target difficult to hit. Hesho finished off the last of the six as I stepped up, dumbfounded.
Are you well?
He asked, hovering on his platform and panting softly.
You seem to have been injured at least once.
Hesho, I said, I want to hug you.
Because of the differences in size, he said, raising a paw. Perhaps this human gesture will suffice.
He lifted his mask, smiling, and let me bump his paw. That weapon, I said.
Ah, yes, he said, patting the sheath at his side. The darting hawk that separates sinew from bone. A family weapon I fetched from Evershore when the assault was announced. You charge it like this.
He grabbed the sheath.
Then you whip it out like this.
It released a burst of energy when he swung, making the air glow. By the time he returned it to the sheath, it had stopped glowing.
Not the most efficient weapon, but it has a certain historical flair which I thought appropriate for my current station.
Thank you, I said to him. Whatever debt you owed me for helping you in the nowhere is paid.
Ah. But that is not how it works, Spensa,
he said.
You mistake me. I did not come here because of a debt.
He smiled.
I came to help a friend.
I grinned back, then grabbed Doomslug and waved for Hesho to join me as I ran into the hangar bay. We just had to steal a ship and the hangar bay was empty. No ships. Only some frightened officials trying to hide behind a stack of bins on the far side of the room. There was no way for me to chase Braid down. Chapter 57. I fell to my knees, suddenly deflated. It felt as though all of my strength, intensity, and even anger had been sucked out of my body. I had been full of so many emotions for so long that coming down from them now felt enervating. What had I expected? That Braid would leave a ship behind? Besides, all of the ships that had been in here had remote control functions that let her take them over, as she demonstrated before our duel earlier. Doomslug fluted mournfully.
Spencer?
A very quiet voice in my head said.
I arrived in a small ship, Hesho said. Though it fit only a kitson, my poor ship is not in flying shape any longer. Those manning this station did not make my approach easy. I am sorry.
Spencer, it's me, your ghost.
I nodded dully. I had been so certain it would come down to a duel between me and Braid. One final flight, one final time in the sky. What now? Could anyone else help the slugs of Evensong? Could I reach them through that Delver's influence? Embot, I thought to him. I'm inhibited here and I can't leave. Can you reach Jorgen?
I could, he thought, but I'm thinking. Everyone else is helping. I want to help too.
Talk to Jorgen, I sent. Tell him that Braid is flying for Evensong and we need to stop her, somehow.
We should chase her down, he said. Together.
I'm sorry, I said. Mentally, emotionally, physically exhausted. I never finished building your new body.
And I love you for trying, he said. Though, to be honest, I don't think that shell would have worked. I can't be housed in a black box like that again. I'm so much more now.
He was probably right. I felt sick. Even that was a failure.
No, not a failure, he said. It showed me something. Set me thinking. You know what happens to Delvers when they come into the somewhere?
The air warped in front of me. Dust burst from a hole in space, like smoke shrouding something growing out of the nowhere. A Delver. No, Embot.
They form a body for themselves, I said. Not just a body, he said. A body in the shape they know. Of what used to house them, of...
The dust settled onto a shining black ship, vaguely W-shaped, with enormous boosters and a full complement of destructors. His ship. His old ship, but made new, fitting his growth and what he'd become. Oh, stars and saints.
Hi, he said through a speaker on the front. I've been resurrected. Do I start a religion now, or do I wait for you to do it for me? That part has always confused me.
Embot, I said, climbing to my feet.
I can't believe. I have decided that I like being a spaceship, he said. Having a body is nice. Thank you for giving me the idea. Anyway, are we going to...
Right, right. I leaped up, Doomslug in hand, and climbed into the waiting cockpit. Hesho flew down and found, with an ooh, that Embot had made him a battle station with co-pilot controls. Doomslug had her own cushioned box. I helped her inside, then strapped in, and the canopy closed over me. Finally, I put my hands on the controls. So familiar, so inviting. Not the ship I'd repaired in that cavern, but somehow still the same, if not better. I'm okay flying you, I said to Embot.
Please, he said. You've seen my attempts. You can be my chauffeur, mortal. That will leave me to the contemplation of various more important things, such as the nature of mushrooms.
A cold skin of dusk,
Hesho said solemnly.
Yet thriving and beautiful, as only life knows.
Yes, Embot said.
What he said.
I grinned.
then spun the ship using maneuvering thrusters so I didn't hurt any of the officials hiding behind the bins before blasting out into space. It felt so good. But Scud, there was a Delver hovering just overhead. Chet, I sent.
I have persuaded my associate, he replied, to sit back, watch, and see. Since you no longer are bonded to me, she is not as frightened of you as she once was. But be careful. Her inhibitor field is up. It seems not all of our kind are going to be as accommodating as we'd like. So far, she is the only one actively working against you. But you have given us a sense of individuality and, well, they're using it.
No problem. Because while Braid had a huge lead on me, I wasn't in just any ship. I was in Embot. I pushed on his overburn, and we exploded across the battlefield. Hesho helpfully called up a proximity overlay on the monitor and showed me how to avoid those giant worm things. I skimmed along one of the monsters, angling toward Braid, and was past it before it had time to so much as look at me. By Embot's estimations, unfortunately, I would reach Braid just a little too late. So I called her. Rather, I had Embot hack her comm so she would take my call even if she didn't want to. Hello, Braid, I said. I was pleased to see her ship waver, jogging to the side, as if she expected that I'd be shooting soon after talking. That earned me a few seconds. You still want that duel? I asked.
You know I do, she said, her voice tense.
Great, because you're going to get it. You see me? She cursed softly, perhaps noting the velocity at which I was closing in. She didn't have an advanced AI, or, well, Delver, to calculate the difference in our speeds for her. She would just eyeball it, and had to be thinking that I would reach her soon. Flying straight when someone was coming up on your tail was deadly to a starfighter. She broke off, going on the defensive.
Fine, she said. Let's do this.
I slowed as I got closer. Acceleration was vital, but so was maneuverability, and you needed to balance the two. As I drew near, she came screaming back toward me. Around us, Delvers the size of battleships emerged in the void, sending out more drones, copies of Embot when he'd been housed in a little cleaning drone to rescue Tanix. Jorgen's coalition ships began to appear near the installation we'd just left. But I was only here for one fight. I needed this. I had to prove that I could win. As soon as that thought crossed my mind, though, a part of me chuckled. Why in the saint's name would I need to prove anything after all I'd been through? I didn't need to beat Braid in a starfighter duel. I knew I was good enough to do so, and even if not, who cared? Scud. Scud, had I just outgrown, well, myself? Braid wouldn't want to fight either. This would be cover for some other plan. What was it? I thought I knew. Chet, I sent. You still there?
Indeed.
Contact Jorgen, I sent. I can't do it with this inhibitor field, but you can cut through it. I need you to ask him to do something for me. Chapter 58, Braid. Braid had no intention of dueling Spensa, of course. Fortunately, Spensa didn't know that. She'd always been about the contest, the fight, while Braid had always seen the big picture, the larger scope. Like right now, with those inhibitors going down, she had an opening. She merely had to reach that open spot ahead, far enough from the Delvers that she'd be able to jump away. She made sure to make a good showing of dueling. Any less would get her killed. Spensa got on her tail, and if Braid was being honest, she couldn't have prevented that. So Braid legitimately gave it her best, diving along the outside of one of the vast worms, then firing a spray of shots along it to make it light up. That should slow... Scrud. She could barely concentrate on her flying because Spensa was back there, weaving between the worm's tines with the energy of a child on a playground, fleet and precise. How? How did she fly like that? Braid burst away from the vast worm on Overburn, cutting close to some junk, and Spensa followed, making it seem easy, as she light-lanced to change trajectory on a whim. At each turn, Spensa got closer to Braid. So Braid went into her best evasives, but Spensa matched them turn for turn and kept getting closer. How? Scrut. It was all right. A general didn't have to be able to fight every soldier on the battlefield. Big picture, she told herself. You just need to be able to hyperjump. Braid had managed to maneuver them closer and closer to that open spot with no inhibitor, reach there, and she could escape. Hell, from there she could hyperjump right to Evensong and fry the slugs. Then she jumped the intelligence stronghold on Varvaxin 3, which not even Kuna knew about. She was almost free. Spensa didn't realize, but... A shot hit Braid's shield. Not from behind, but from in front. From her escape route. There, to her shock, a group of starfighters had just appeared. An entire flight. Cheating, she said into the comm. Spensa, you coward. This was supposed to be a duel. Just the two of us. That's the thing, Spensa said back. It's not just the two of us, Braid. I'm not alone. I will never be alone. I'm part of something bigger. And when you pick a fight with one of us...
Chapter 59. You pick it with all of us, I finished, grinning as Braid veered away from the freedom she'd been seeking. Ships stormed after her. Skyward flight, I said. Roll call and confirmation.
Skyward one, said Arturo. Call sign, Amphisbina. And no, I'm never going to shorten it. I'm here, Spin.
Skyward two, said FM, voice firm and seemingly cold, yet I'd heard music from her cockpit just before she cut it off. Temporary assignment to active flight duty. Call sign FM. I'm here.
Skyward three, said Ned's affable, relaxed voice. Call sign Netter. We're here.
Ned? I asked, amazed. You're flying?
Well, I'm the co-pilot, he said.
Hello, a Kitson voice said over the line. I'm Hannah. Netter needed someone to fly.
All part of my plan, he said. I can take naps during battles now. Anyway, we're here for you, Spin.
Braid dodged right as shots chased her, her motions increasingly frantic.
Skyward four, Alanique said in her own language. Call sign, Angel. I'm here.
Braid broke left, but more fire came from that direction, scoring her shield, lighting it up.
Skyward five, Sadie said.
I'd have to stop thinking of her as the new girl. She'd now been in the flight longer than I had when I'd left for Starsight.
Call sign Sentry. I'm here.
Skyward six,
T-Stall said.
Call sign T-Stall, here.
Skyward seven, Catnip called. Call sign Catnip, I'm here. I can't believe I'm still mixed up with you lot.
Skyward eight, Cowrie said. And all 30 of us are here for you. Did the Masked Exile arrive?
He is here,
Hesho said from his controls,
and is grateful for your concern and your leadership.
Skyward nine, Shiver said. They say we need call signs. I'm thinking Stalwart. We are here.
Deliz flashed her comlight to indicate her presence as well.
"And I'm here too,"
Embat said.
"Hello, everyone. I've been resurrected, but I'm not starting a religion. I've decided they're too much work."
"Skyward 11, Kimmelin said, moving her ship in next to mine. "Call sign Quirk. I'm here." I watched Braid's shield go down to a web of destructor blasts, and I sent a message telling the others to hold their fire.
"Skyward 0,
a voice said in my ear. Jorgen's wonderful voice.
"Always with you, Spensa. Even when I can't be there in person. I told them that this time you hadn't run off. I knew you'd been kidnapped."
"Thank you," I said to him, "for believing in me." Braid slowed her ship, realizing she was surrounded, outgunned. I could see her turn her fighter toward me, could almost make out her expression as she considered. Then she bolted, trying to escape. I vaporized her cockpit with a single shot.
"Skyward 12, I whispered. "Call sign Spin."
Confirmed.